Hello and welcome to The Wanted Podcast. My name is Piwe Mpye. Establishing a successful and sustainable fashion brand is no small feat. But infusing garments with joy and purpose is an achievement of an entirely new magnitude. In this episode, our fashion assistant, Jennifer Krug, speaks to Olivia Kanaway, the visionary founder of Usher 11. Raised in the heart of Kenya and later studying fashion design in Cape Town, Olivia has built a career in ethical fashion. From working with the UK-based Ethical Fashion Forum to establishing sustainable manufacturing facilities and running her own brand, she brings a wealth of knowledge and experience. In this conversation, we delve into Olivia's journey, exploring her inspiration, craftsmanship, resilience, and commitment to responsible production. Jennifer begins by asking her who Olivia Kanaway is.
I'm definitely a creative, and having been born and raised in Kenya, I feel like that sort of very rich African upbringing really informed not only my sort of creativity, but also my thought process. And it was something I only realized like much later on. I think there's something so magnificent about like the African way of doing things, where it's like the opposite spectrum of like being spoon-fed and things just being on a plate. You know, in Kenya growing up, there weren't fashion boutiques, there weren't furniture stores. And what this meant is that when you sort of had the idea of having something, you kind of had to make it. There's an incredible sense of craftsmanship in Kenya. And I feel like just tapping into that and understanding that like you can just have an idea and then engage with various craftsmen or women in that, yeah, generally women, I should say. You can just make anything happen. And I think, coming back to who I am, I think that really informed like such a strong part of my identity in that, it feels very limitless. You know, you can kind of set your sights on any idea and basically see that into fruition simply by thinking about who the different craftsmen or craftswomen that you can collaborate with. And, you know, I'm talking anything from like weaving to sewing to metalsmith to upholstery, like all sorts of things, you know, like anything, carpentry, woodwork, all that sort of thing, anything was possible. And I really love that. I'm so grateful for it now in my later years that I've sort of identified that. But yeah, other than that, I'm also a mother. And I think that's something that very much transforms one. I actually started Usher 11 when I was pregnant with my first baby. So Usher 11 was born first, first baby king second. And I now have a second child as well. But I think, you know, it's something that is relevant as well, because, you know, I think what we're doing in the sort of sustainable fashion space and also being a small business owner is very much rewriting how business has been done for so long. Mm-hmm. And I love incorporating the realities of, you know, having kids and also, you know, that like Coral, my oldest daughter, and actually Reef now as well, she often gets involved with the creative process and the print design and stuff like that. And I think it's important that like things aren't all separate, you know. And yeah, I live a very low-key, laid-back life. I live in a small little village near Cape Point, and nature is very important to us, and staying connected and grounded and reminding us of why we're here and what we're doing. And yeah, I've also been always really inspired by people. And I think incorporating stories, especially around people, is something so important as well. The kind of like the essence behind Usher 11 in terms of let's inspire each other is really, you know, kind of capturing the idea that it doesn't matter what you do, whether you're a doctor or an accountant or a creative or a therapist or whatever it is, you know, that we can all still spread light in that, in whatever field it is. And it's actually so important that normal people doing normal things are kind of doing that work, because we can't all be light workers, you know. I really think that it's important that in whatever we do, that able to be a vehicle for inspiration and encouraging people to do better, and like using it as a inspiration to myself, actually, to do things better.
Sure. Yeah. So beautiful.
I think there's a very strong layer of spirituality throughout a lot of the text that I've read and your website and just your energy as well and your Instagram. But were your parents spiritual people? Were they creative people? Where do you think you got that sort of very open, loving energy from?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think, so my parents weren't necessarily spiritual. Like, I mean, my mom instinctively is just a very open person, actually. And I think there was definitely an influence there where I was kind of taught from an early age that do good unto others, you know. And that's, I remember her saying, like, her way of kind of going to church was like giving people a lift type thing. But no, I feel like it's kind of been quite a journey that I've fallen into, I suppose. I don't think you plan those sort of things. I'm very grateful that I did find that path, though, because it just makes the most sense to me.
Which is, I suppose, what we're all looking for. So the next question is, what does your day-to-day routine look like?
As I said, I live in a small village quite far, about an hour away from Cape Town. And our studio is actually in Cape Town. So I work from home 3 days a week and I go into the studio 2 days a week. But yeah, in the morning time, I have the most peace because my kids are at school. And yeah, generally the morning starts off with just kind of checking in with the teams, checking in with our production partners, checking in with the studio, checking in with our sales assistants in our stores, and kind of just making sure any sort of system flows are flowing. And then, yeah, depending on, you know, what the sort of time of year is and what sort of is pressing at the moment, it's often print design, which I've actually been busy with this morning. But yeah, so yeah, tap into some design stuff. Often then kind of, yeah, work on any kind of like planning for the kind of next month plus. And then also marketing. Yeah, tapping into where we're at with Talking Loud. But yeah, I have to say no 2 days are very similar, to be honest. Each day kind of presents itself with a whole new set of tasks and challenges and yeah, experiences.
I feel like you must be the kind of person that enjoys that sort of newness and variety every day.
Yeah, I definitely do. And I think also, I think like in the past, back in the early days, I feel like I used to maybe like worry and stress, and I when I look back on it, I just kind of like have this feeling of like there was this like tightness. And it's been so amazing, you know, having done like spiritual work alongside the work, the Asha 11 work, how things have just opened up and flow so much easier. And I love waking up in the morning not knowing what the day is going to hold, and just flowing with what presents itself.
So this is more of a me question, because I'm still at the very beginning of my journey, and I relate to that sort of tightness and anxiety. What helps you sort of relax and move away from that?
So I think a couple of things. So one, I do continual work with an energy healer. So we have a check-in anything from one to two times a month. And I think just having that kind of like, it's almost like energy coaching, how she often describes it is like, if you're a sportsman woman, you need a coach because that reminds you what you need to do. And they kind of like redirect you when you kind of go a little bit off course or whatever. And it's the same in life or specifically in business. You need that kind of constant like guidance and redirection. And so that's like insanely helpful. And I think just finding your right person for that is really amazing. Like the same lady that I work with, some friends of mine have been to see, and she hasn't necessarily worked for them, but they, you know, so it's a bit of a process finding that person, but I think it's so important. And then Secondly, meditate. I know it sounds very cliche, but meditating, when I know it's always sort of seems so hard to do, but I think the most important thing to remember is you can literally meditate for 5 minutes, and that's like such gold. And 5 minutes is so easy. I mean, when if you think just like when you're scrolling on your phone, like 20 minutes goes by in a flash. If you just kind of try and be disciplined to like just give yourself 5 minutes, 10 minutes, slowly it becomes 10 minutes. And I feel like that like always just helped to keep me grounded and in flow. And then of course, just being in nature, that's like free meditation basically.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
And I have like seriously hot, thick skinned feet because I just find like when you're in nature, walking without shoes on is like just, yeah, really, really accelerates that groundedness.
Well, thank you. I definitely want to get into meditation more. But what was it like growing up in Kenya?
Yeah, it was just incredible, honestly. Again, such a huge connection to nature. Such a sense of freedom as well. I never felt constrained by anything, really. And community is really big and important there as well, which I find so valuable. Yeah, beautiful, free, open, creative, inspiring, all of those wonderful things.
How is it? I've never been to Kenya. I would love to. But how is it different from South Africa? What allowed you to feel so free and open?
That's a good question. So I mean, obviously I can kind of only really compare it to Cape Town because that's where I've been predominantly based, but and Cape Town, I feel like it's a unique little bubble. But I think people just live a little bit more on the edge in Kenya. Like things are a lot more
interesting.
You know, like I don't know if this is a good example, but like when you go camping in Kenya, it's generally wild camping. Like there's no demarcated areas. There's generally the closest neighboring campsite would be like more than 5 kilometers away. You'd be lucky if there's ablution blocks kind of thing. Like I feel like the Western Cape anyways is very like kind of, you know, catered
organized.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so for example, we spend like a good month or so a year in the Transkei on the Wild Coast just to kind of like exploring and stuff. And I feel like that, I don't know if you've ever been to the Wild Coast, but that version of South Africa reminds me so much of Kenya. I guess everything's just a little bit more backwards and feels there's less structure and rules.
I love how that sort of translated for you. Do you have any like core memories that you associate with your childhood and with just living there?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, camping trips in the wild, lots of time on the beach and the ocean. Yeah, connections with friends. There was always like big groups of families and lots of kids and the parents also having cats.
Are your parents, it sounds like your parents, you know, were very like family oriented. And just, you know, doing things together. And is that, am I picking that up right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so the other thing is that I actually also went to boarding school from the age of 8 because that's just what a lot of Kenyan kids do because, we never lived in the city. We always lived either on the coast or in the Great Rift Valley. And so I think, because term time, like when it came to the holidays, they really kind of gave it sucks because it was obviously such a special time for us and them. Yeah.
Did you go to boarding school in Kenya?
Yeah.
That must have been, that's cool. I really wanted to go to boarding school.
It was really tough, to be honest. I mean, I went even a little bit later than a lot of kids. A lot of kids started at 6, which is just crazy.
Sure.
But the boarding school that I went to was also in the bush and in the Great Rift Valley. So it was like, it was a really incredible. It was a very high discipline space, but like old school kind of vibes. But it was in such a beautiful setting. I mean, there was like mountains and rivers and forests and stuff. So our weekends were spent like exploring and building dens and climbing mountains and doing all sorts of fun things. So we did make the most of it, despite the terrible food and harsher teeth of discipline. It was also a very creative space as well. They had a big focus on art. And I like, you know how you always have those, that teacher or two that sticks in your mind. Like my art teacher and my drama teacher were like really those people. And I think they also definitely had a part to play in my creativity further along.
That's amazing. I know the feeling. I had an art teacher in grade 11 and a trick. And they just really can just change how you view to art.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's also. And if you have that teacher that gives that confidence to you, it's
100%. And let you explore, I think, rather than just, you know, doing it a specific way.
Yeah, exactly.
The brand has a very distinct aesthetic, at least in my view. It's a culmination of a lot of different things, but it's very distinct. It's illustrated, it's colorful, it's pulling from a lot of different cultures. How did you develop this aesthetic and like decide that this is what I want Usher 11 to be?
So when I was conceptualizing the brand, I have to say that the design aesthetic side of it was definitely not my primary focus, because I think I kind of knew and trusted that that was just going to flow. But really what was so, you know, distinct and formative in terms of like the foundation was knowing that I wanted to do everything that we did as sustainably as possible, make sure we explored all routes and, you know, from the textiles to the dyes to the printing, et cetera, et cetera. And for me, the reason I'm sure that's a question that's still coming, but for me that I'm just mentioning it now, because first and foremost, before the design aesthetic, like that was, you know, what I founded the brand ideals on. And then as far as like, the design goes, I think it really is a bit of an extension of me and what I love and what inspires me and stuff. And honestly, the print designing process is always such a journey. I'm actually working on a deadline for submitting our autumn print this Friday. And I tend to always leave it to the last minute, but I feel like it's almost become this like medium to like translate or communicate, maybe I should say, like my perception of this world and saying that, you know, it sort of like embodies nature and color. But there's often, and I don't often communicate this because I feel like it's like stating what is, but I always try and incorporate a sense of connectedness, because that's truly what I believe, is that everything is indeed connected. So I get in saying that it's often not very thematic. There's often like quite a crazy mishmash of things going on. But if you do kind of take time to like, you know, really zoom into details and stuff, there's a lot of like subliminal messaging that just kind of, I guess, talks through like an illustrative way. And I also love incorporating a little bit of like bizarreness because I think the world is bizarre, and it's always nice to also like encourage people to like open their mind and just see things a little bit differently. And the one I think in the Surya print with this like, I don't even actually know what creature it is, but it's like a kind of dragonfish thing that I actually, a friend of mine had a waistcoat and it was like hand quilted and it had this amazing creature on it. And I took a photo and then painted it. And then it's like, you're so weird. And then I had a little spaceship that had a tiger in it. And so then the tiger is calling the dragonfish to come back into space and be an alien with him, because you're obviously way too weird to be on Earth.
Oh no, I love that. That is so cool. I feel like it just speaks to that you can take inspiration from anything and everywhere.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I also feel like I'd sort of, you know, you, I feel like you often only realize things about yourself like halfway through type thing. And I think I went through a phase of trying to like shy away from color because, you know, it's like cool to be like moody and dark toned and stuff. But when I stepped into our store in Joburg on the weekend, I was like, I just love color. Because it really is like a color explosion. And I was like, I'm going to find you again, because it is just, yeah, it's such a, for me, color brings joy. And yeah, I think it's, you know, so often as women, we choose to wear black because it just feels like safe. And it's great. I often wear black as well. But actually, when you just put on something colorful, it's like, it's this whole other story, and like you become like this whole other being. Yeah, it's funny.
I love that. I agree, and I can I feel like it resonates through the brand. But you know, the fashion industry is not an easy industry, as you very well know. But being an entrepreneur and growing a business in general is not easy. Tell me about the journey of Real Brand. Where did it start? How did you grow?
So for perspective, I'm not sure if you know, but the brand is only 5 years old now. Mm. So it is still fairly in its infancy. I did actually have another brand before Asha 11 that I ran co-owned for 12 years. So I feel like
now
I had a lot of experience coming into Asha 11. And the previous brand, we started it when we were very, very young, like 18. Oh. And we made a lot of mistakes, expensive mistakes. We also saw a lot of wonderful successes, and we also learned a lot. And we built a beautiful brand that was, you know, really something that I was proud of. But at the end of the day, those costly mistakes like were, you know, a hard lesson. And I remembered actually having a moment of maybe like somewhere like three quarters of the way into that journey and thinking like, I just wish I could start again knowing like what I know now. And then sure enough, that happened. And I think, oh, it was such a blessing and a gift, because it really allowed me to kind of like start Asha 11, not only with such a firm like knowledge of what I wanted the brand to be founded on, but also to kind of dodge a lot of the mistakes that I had made before. But yeah. So I think maybe if I was to compare the two, like with my previous brand, we were kind of like, we were doing the thing and we were trying to be the thing. Whereas with Asha 11, it's almost like the other way around. It's like, I have such a firm understanding and knowing of like what the essence is, like as HBRY, that we are the thing, and then we kind of do the thing.
I like that.
I think for anyone in business, I think that's such a crucial like way to look at things, because when you try and do it the other way around, you're just always chasing, never quite arriving, if you know what I mean.
I love that. I feel like a lot of the brands that, because I studied fashion, I know you did as well. I didn't study design, but I did fashion media. And so I've got friends in design, and the brands that I connect to the most are the ones that have a deep story. And it's not just having a brand for the sake of, you know, having a brand.
Yeah, totally. And I just think it's so cool that that's how like emotive marketing is now, you know. It really is like, without having to have like massive budgets or massive strategies and stuff, it is just by default giving smaller businesses that have authenticity and good intentions at their forefront like almost the upper hand on like big retailers, you know.
Was your previous brand also a clothing brand?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Okay. Because one of the questions that I have sort of later on, speaks to, you know, you studied design, but, you know, you can study something and you're only getting the very basis of an industry. And so I was wondering, where did you get your knowledge of, textiles and production from? So that makes more
Yeah,
sense. Oh.
100% winging it and learning as you go.
Was it you and who was your partner?
Yeah,
Yeet did we?
and we met at university at fashion school as well, and started it then together.
I love that. So you seem very well traveled, just in terms of not just being from Kenya, but like pulling from a lot of different cultures. You can correct me if I'm wrong, maybe it's just books, but where have you been?
Wow, that's a good question. I've traveled all over Europe, all over the Med, which was really cool. I did that in my 20s. There's just something so romantic and wonderful about like the Mediterranean and the amazing food, and also that like much older culture, like every little town that you go, like the old village walk, the old city walls or whatever. I have been probably the most remote place that I've ever been is a place called the Banyak Islands, which is in northern Sumatra, which was such an incredible, I'll never forget like the journey getting there. Just that in itself just made you feel like so removed. It was like two flights, a 12-hour car ride, a 6-hour ferry ride, and then like another 3-hour boat ride. I'm literally nowhere. I've also been to Tahiti. That was really cool. An ex-boyfriend was sailing around the world, and I went to join them on their boat for a while. I've actually driven from Cape Town to Kenya and back again, so covered like
Whoa.
much all of the Southern African countries in that on that route, which was that was really one of my favorite adventures ever. And then America, I've been to New York a few times. I love New York. I really loved New York in my 20s. The last time I went there, I was like, okay, I can see why it's a thing for your 20s. Like, it just takes so much energy. It's like such a vibrant city. Yeah, I've never been to South America. That is like one of my really top wish lists. And also West Africa is one of my big bucket lists. And like the stands, the Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, like that whole area, that feels just like a textile journey that will happen one day.
Definitely. What were you doing when you were traveling? Like, were you just backpacking?
No, so actually, often marketing. So when I did the trips with the Mjayed, it was when I had my previous brand, and I had one small suitcase with my clothes in it and another bigger suitcase with all the samples in it, and would literally like walk around all the stores and find ones that were like kind of independent label stores and like cold call pitch kind of vibe to them. Yeah, other times just on holiday.
That's really cool though. And it shows a lot of independence, like just a refusal to, I think, not fail, but a refusal to not do what you love.
Yeah. I think also like when you have your own business, it really it does become something that you live, breathe, eat, etc. So, yeah, it's often a necessity to kind of involve it with what you do.
You noted in a Twig interview, it was in like 2021, that you enjoy the creativity, but you also do enjoy the business side of the brand. What skills would you say are the most important, and how did you develop them in yourself?
So I never know if it's like a good thing or actually a bit of a downfall. But for me, yeah, I've always felt that I have kind of like equal parts left brain and right brain. And obviously a lot of the day-to-day stuff often takes more right brain kind of like practical stuff. And I often wondered like, if you didn't have that, it must be so difficult to run your own business because you'd almost have to rely on somebody else to kind of, give you that sense of structure. And I've mentioned this a couple of times to people before, but like it sounds bizarre, but I often actually start designing a collection on a spreadsheet, because for me, that's like my right brain way of being like, okay, this is what we want to achieve in terms of offering, like the kind of separates breakdown, the print kind of breakdown, and then kind of get an idea of what sort of numbers are needed. And then from there, then I go to my sketch pad and then start fleshing it out from there. But I mean, that's just it's a funny way that my brain works. But once I know that I have that like structured framework that we kind of creatively fill, it just feels a lot easier for me somehow. But yeah, I think it's so important. I really like, you know, the start of the year, for example, like I literally spend like the first 2 weeks literally just mapping out like objectives, targets, like timeline, all of that kind of thing. And then once that's like, it's something that you can refer back to like throughout the year, being like, okay, cool, are we on that track? Yeah, we are. And like ease things around a bit. And it's funny because I'm often aware, like some days I'm like, oh, really don't want to open a spreadsheet. And I just want to like paint and draw. And then other days I'm like, oh, I just don't have that creative. Like, and I really have to force myself to get out my paints and, you know, be creative. And I'll literally like jump open a spreadsheet and just like tinker away at numbers type thing. So yeah, it's interesting to just like observe and be aware of.
What skills would you say are most important to have or to develop as a business owner?
It's a really good question. I do think understanding your numbers is critical, because, you know, if you don't, you're basically, yeah, you don't have, I don't want to really use the word control, but like, you know, there's no accountability for what's going right and what's on type thing. I think, and again, I know it does sound a bit cliched, and I remember sort of people saying it to me, and I was like, yeah, but really knowing your customer and having just like an authentic relationship with them, for me, is like one of the most important things. And that anyone can do, you know, it's not I'm just surprised it's not something that we're more taught at like school. Just be you.
So the brand has a really cool focus, as you mentioned, on environmental and social responsibility. What prompted that initial awareness of those values and, you know, the need for them in your brand?
So actually, I was initially, from a very young age, always inspired by the social aspect. And again, I think that comes back to my Kenyan upbringing. And when I was 18, I think that was in like 2006 or something, I was in my final year studying fashion at CPUT. And I remember we had started my previous brand, LSO. And I remember this organization from the UK that were called the Ethical Fashion Forum. It's still going now, but it's called, oh my God, I'm having a blank. They sent a couple of representatives out to obviously just educate universities and stuff, university students, on that, you know, this was a movement that was happening. And it was something that was so unspoken of, so unheard of, so like, you know, no one had an idea. And I remember they sat down and they, you know, they gave us a whole talk on like what ethical fashion was and how important it was. And I was just like, bing, 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 bing. Like, this is yes. I feel like I've heard this all before. I know this makes sense. Like, this is what I want to do. So after the talk, my then partner and I stayed back and we went to just go and chat to them. And I said, you know, we've started this brand and we want to do this ethical thing. Like, what do we do? And thinking that, you know, like coming from a sort of education background, like that they would say, okay, so you fill in this form and then you say you do this and blah, blah, blah. And I very quickly learned that it wasn't like that. It was that you go out and you just do it the best way that you can. And yeah, in a long story short, we went and set up our production for Laleso in Kenya. And it started with these two ladies who I'd known for years. They worked on the veranda of a small business that was across the road from my parents' place. And I was like, would you guys like to come and sew here? And we're just making skirts and blah, blah, blah. again, so naive. But yeah, long story short, not long after that, we got that brand got into Topshop's Oxford Circus flagship store. And we went from kind of like, yeah, well, maybe need like 100 units a week to like, we need like 1,000.
Insane.
And so we very quickly built this manufacturing team in Kenya on my parents' property. And it was amazing. I mean, I think when we transitioned, we had like 15 people that were working there. And I was mostly based in the UK at the time. And I got very involved in the ethical fashion scene that was like really up and coming at the time. This was like by 2007, 2008. And reconnected with that organization, Ethical Fashion Forum, and yeah, just became quite like involved with that whole network of people. And our brand was definitely kind of like, you know, one of the pioneers of shouting the message of sustainability and stuff like that. And so often people would ask me, you know, people who were from the UK, they would say like, how do you produce ethically? Like, how do you do it? Where do you do it? And I said, well, I'm kind of like, I have a little bit of an advantage because I have like, you know, my roots in Kenya, and I was able to just kind of set it up ourselves and be able to see. Anyway, whole long story short, I then realized that A, it was way too much of a handful for us to be running a fashion brand and marketing it and designing and doing all of that, as well as running a manufacturing facility. I started to think about ways to separate the two. And obviously I didn't want to like abandon this whole team that we'd spent so long like nurturing and stuff. And then as luck would have it, I was at another ethical fashion conference, actually in Nairobi this time, and met this woman from the UK who was a part of another like sustainable fashion. It was, God, names are just not coming to me today. The sustainable fashion forms, a guy called Carlo Cipriani. He was spearheading it, but I met this girl, Jo, woman. And she, I was just in chatting to her, I was like, you know, what do you do? And she was like, well, I'm really passionate about sustainable fashion. And my husband and I actually really want to move to Africa. And I was like, I've got the perfect idea for you. And I said, I explained to her the situation. I was like, you know, so many people in the UK are asking me, like, where can we produce ethically? I was like, there's obviously a demand for it, but there just isn't that kind of like reputable body to like, you know, offer that service. And I was like, I've got this team. I'll give you our product. Anyway, long story short, that she did it. She took it on and she has grown it into like, honestly, what I feel is one of the greatest success stories. It's called Soko Kenya. You can check it out. And the lady's name is Jo Maiden. And they now employ like over 500 people in this like incredible ethical factory where honestly, it's so deeply rooted in the investment of these people's lives and the improvement of it. I mean, you see the people that come to work, they are like, you know, they're really considered so highly in their communities because they have employment there. And that, I mean, so many things, like not just a creche type thing. It's like finance and education, like helping them to invest. Like, so they're really not just a stakeholder, but actually growing it. So yeah, there was a bit of a side tangent, but just to explain that was really like I was always just more about the social aspect, the people, because I that was like the most important thing for Africans in Africa. And I think it was actually only more after Laleso and when I was starting Asha 11, when I actually read Yvon Chouinard's book, Let My People Go Surfing. It's a really incredible book. I don't know if you've read it, but he's the founder of Patagonia. And he wrote it actually as a, he initially wrote it as a manifesto for his staff, like in terms of to just like outline the, you know, the building blocks of Patagonia. And it was so phenomenal that his staff were all like, you need to publish this. And yeah, it's really such an inspiring book. And I think it just also really helped me to define like how I wanted to do things. And essentially it's just that simple thing of like every single little thing that you do, consider the implications and the impact. And that was really when environment became so much more prolific to me. And I think it has really been in the last like 5 to 8 years where the environment has really pushed it to the forefront, rightly so, because it's, you know, it's obviously just accelerating for all the right reasons. So I also find that that's been such a, it's almost like a more challenging part of the journey because, but a fun challenging part of the journey because, you know, you can get so creative when it comes to like downcycling, upcycling, all those things. And yeah, I find, I do enjoy that challenge. It's like, okay, what are we going to do with this now? So it gives off
really cool.
Of like new ideas and stuff like that.
Mm. What do your brainstorm sessions look like?
Often driving in the car when I've got a quiet moment and just ideas popping into my head. Yeah, I can't say it. If I often have time to just sit down and brainstorm, there's also just much going on that you're just kind of like.
What traditional skills are incorporated into your designs and how did you come about them?
With our kind of like mainline clothing, it's really just the you know, sewing. But something that's like definitely like a little bit of a side angle of the brand, we launched a couple of years ago called Asha 11 Inspired. Because when I go to Kenya every year, I'm so inspired by all the things and the craftsmanship, as I said, that I always love to kind of use that time and space to think of ways to incorporate the cross skills into very kind of like accompanying products, not necessarily our main line. One of the skills that I just love and find so fascinating is palm weaving. It's just such perfection and so deeply rooted natural materials, you know, literally zero cost for them involved except for their time, and it creates something so beautiful.
That's very cool. I didn't know about that, actually.
Yeah, I'll show you one second. We just launched these with our resort collection, but like these baskets, which you will have probably seen 100 times.
Those are stunning.
Or, you know, in Kenya, it's called a kikapu, but this is all hand woven. I mean, it's just so exquisite. And yeah, and then we used some of our offcuts to make a nice Asha 11.
Gorgeous.
That is
very cool.
Yeah.
So tell me about the Summer 2025 collection.
So often, generally our collections are defined by the print offering, and also in terms of like a design process or timeline, you know, that's where it starts, I suppose. And then the print itself often then influences the silhouettes, and the silhouettes definitely influenced by the print itself. So the Surya print, they like has this quite like feminine kind of floaty energy. So a lot of the dresses that we did in that style, in that print, are indeed very feminine and dreamy. And then contrasting with it is our print, which is just super fun and playful. And I think, yeah, they kind of just create this like literally joyful feeling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the campaign shoot that we did for the collection in Kenya was, yeah, the aim was definitely to just kind of reflect that. And yeah, I love how it came out.
So you shot in Kenya?
Yeah.
That's incredible. No, I love the imagery and just the colors. How do you like decide on the direction of a collection? Do you kind of just let it go?
Yeah, that's definitely a tricky question to answer. Yeah, it kind of just unfolds organically, I guess.
And why the Swahili, and why like that focus on sort of, it's almost, to me, it seems like an appreciation of the moment. Where did that come from?
So again, I think having grown up there, it's something that just feels like part of my design identity. And, you know, I think as much as I love collaborating with like local artisans and creating products, I also love collaborating with other artists. And a few years back, I like kind of opened this door through social media to like this incredible skill set of Kenyan photographers. And when I was like, I really wanted to shoot our summer campaign in Kenya, like this was like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, And obviously, your first thought is like, okay, bring his photographer from South Africa. And then suddenly, yeah, like I said, this door opened and I was like, whoa, I had no idea. There's like this incredible, incredible skill set from Nairobi mostly, who have such a, you know, unique African style that I feel like, you know, is representative of Kenya itself, that I just feel is so cool to like be a part of and capture. So yeah, I've worked with three different Kenyan photographers now over the years, and each, yeah, it's so different to the whole process and style of photography in Cape Town, but it's awesome. I love it. And it really, yeah, it just feels so cool to work with Kenyans in Kenya, if you know what I mean.
100%. And where did you find these locations? Like, where did you shoot exactly?
Literally just from exploring. So generally my family and I spend like 2 to 3 months in Kenya over the winter here, which is obviously perfect timing to be shooting summer campaign. And literally from the moment that I stepped foot on Kenyan soil, I start like conceptualizing and thinking of ideas. And like, no matter where I'm going or what I'm doing, I'm constantly just like looking at things and places, imagining like how it could translate for a shoot. And then I'll often like then dedicate a day or two to like properly go and recce. And once like a space in particular like stands out, I'll then like layer on to that, you know, with a kind of more thematic like art direction. But yeah, it's a process that I really love. I never thought that like that was a thing, but over the years I've noticed that like shoots are definitely like an annual highlight.
I mean, I can imagine. I also really enjoy shooting and putting shoots together. So I've two final questions. What would you consider, whether it's personal or professional, your biggest accomplishment?
Without a doubt, closing the loop on our production process. Yeah, we basically, since we started, we've been upcycling our waste. And yeah, it's always fascinated me like how much value and value that you can create from waste. And you know, like things like our moon bags and our hats and stuff are actually some of our best sellers. But it was always an issue. So basically, cut the garments, bigger pieces of waste, make the upcycled products, small tiny little pieces of waste. And I was like, hey, what are we going to do with that? Because there was a lot of, and yeah, when we developed our winter collection, I was like, because we work with these incredible Indian textiles called Suzani for the winter collection. And it's an amazing cloth, but it's on a kind of like a, almost like a denim kind of, or cotton canvas type thing. So it's winds. And I was like, it'd be so cool to make them into like proper thick winter jackets. And yeah, went down this kind of like rabbit hole of finding somewhere, someone who could basically take those last bits of waste and downcycle it into an inner that we could then use to interline these jackets. And it's a bit of a like slightly broken like chain, in that it's one supplier that we give the waste to, and then it's another supplier who then does the downcycling process. But at the end of the day, it's still kind of seeing each other. And yeah, I think when we made the first range of jackets last winter, I think it was, I was like, wow, we have zero waste.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Cool, especially when you see how much waste there is, you know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just cool to know that it's all fully accountable for.
Yeah, I mean, that is amazing. And so my final question for you is, what are your hopes, or what are your hopes for the future, for yourself and for the brand?
We opened a store earlier this year in Joburg, in Parkhurst, and it was honestly such a dream. That probably comes close to other highlights, but it was such a dream for me to create a space that really embodied like the brand. And mm-hmm. you know, it's great like stocking in other stores, but I often feel like you can't really be who you are in that space, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
To create a space that is fully who we are, just it feels so good. And I think in terms of like making connections with our community and customers there, it just feels so, so right. And I never thought I would like see that, that brick and mortar stores were like a positive kind of avenue for the business to grow into. But I really do, especially for a brand like ours, feel like it is so, so valuable. So yeah, I would definitely, we're definitely looking at opening a couple more of those kind of Asha 11 spaces where it's more than just like a space for people to go and buy clothes, etc. Yeah, maybe in Pretoria, southern suburbs of Cape Town, etc. And then from a design and product perspective, like we're always looking for ways to improve and grow and do things better than we are currently doing them. And I'm very excited to, in the new year, start exploring with some natural dyeing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a big one. And who knows? That's, you know, just stay open and allow whatever it is that's coming our way to flow through.
I love that. Thank you for just making the time for me and just being so open and chatting to me. I'm glad.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Wanted Podcast. Jennifer's interview appeared in the Wanted February issue and is available at wantedonline.co.za. Remember to show the podcast some love with a like, a review, or a share. And you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Iono. And finally, please follow us at Wanted Online SA on the socials. Until next time, I am Spiwe Mpye.